these days, because we have so many bills on the agenda and we're trying to shuffle the paperwork and make sure we stay on top of things. We will generally try to follow the agenda as published. Occasionally, some legislators may come in from different committees to testify, and I will pull bills up. We're not into public hearings today, but sometimes legislators come in to add some comments for us, explain matters during work session. Otherwise, the only testimony that comes up is when we request information from somebody during the course of discussion of a bill, because we are in work session on all of these bills. The first bill we have up for work session is House Bill 2220, so we'll go into work session on that bill. On House Bill 2220, we previously had worked through this, and we had sent it to Ways and Means with a due pass, but then we informally rescinded that referral. I was advised that we need a formal motion to rescind the referral to Ways and Means. I'll give members an opportunity to take a quick look at the bill. It's basically an administrative bill for the Department of Corrections. Some folks raised some concerns about whether or not it had any deep, dark implications, but I checked with legislative fiscal. We checked around. By that, I mean something having to do with prison construction. And the reality is it's more of an accommodation to the Department of Corrections accounting practices. And it is in order for a member of this committee to move to rescind the referral to Ways and Means, because this bill does not have a fiscal impact, and it is appropriate to send it to the floor. Representative Przanski.
So moved.
Colleagues, Representative Przanski moves to rescind the referral to Ways and Means and to send the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the motion is carried. House Bill 2220 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. This closes the work session on House Bill 2220. The carrier will be a volunteer. Representative Przanski. Representative Bowman, are you volunteering?
Yes.
Is that all right with you? Fine. Representative Bowman. Next up is House Bill 2306. We'll move into work session on House Bill 2306. Council, where are we on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that we heard earlier, quite early in the session, and what the bill does is allows in criminal trials for sexual offenses admission of evidence that the defendant committed other sexual offenses. Now, my understanding from talking to the proponents of this bill and some of the members of this committee was that some of the members of the committee wanted an amendment which would say that instead of evidence of prior sexual offenses, that would be limited to convictions for prior sexual offenses would be admitted. And again, current law does allow for that to be admitted for impeachment evidence. What this would allow is for the state to introduce that in the state's case in chief.
And as I recall, these limiting amendments were requested by some of the members of this committee to make them more comfortable with the bill.
Correct.
In other words, the dash one amended version is a narrower version.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I guess I'm going to ask for some discussion on this.
Sure.
Before we go to a motion. I mean, we're setting up a special set of evidence that's not going to be allowed in other type of criminal trials. I mean, why, if we're going to do it for sex offenses, I guess the question's vague. Why aren't we doing it for people charged with burglary, people charged with any other criminal offense? And I guess I don't see in a public policy process why we would be allowing this type of, I mean, I guess what's the nexus for the proof as to an existing charge that the person is being tried for, that they have been convicted of some offense in the past, as to establishing their guilt for this, the current one?
Two responses on that. Although I'm not the advocate for this bill, the understanding I have is that, first of all, this bill says is admissible and may be considered. It does not say it must be admitted. So it's up to the trier, the judge, to make a determination as to admissibility under the facts of any case. But in effect, this says that the door is not totally barred. The door is there, and the judge has to allow the door to be opened. So there is a distinction between requiring it to be minute. But my understanding was that there often is a nexus established in terms of a pattern of, in fact, we've heard testimony about sexual predators, sexual offenders who engage in a pattern of repetitive offenses. And in that particular area, that was what I heard about. But I don't know if Mr. Penn wants to come up and explain that any further. Mr. Sinceri had a comment.
Well, Mr. Chair, the reason that I'm comfortable with this is because I think that it's incumbent upon us to continue to be innovative and to be looking for things that will help protect our citizens in this specific area. You know, this committee in the interim went up to Washington and looked at the civil commitment after the criminal commitment in Washington. We looked at ways of trying to fill the gap before the Measure 11 offenses begin to take place, when we're going to have a lot of the sex offenders back out. And the reason that this bill interests me is because it's becoming more and more apparent that this conduct has an addictive nature to it. Now, that may or may not be proven ultimately, but the fact is that we're seeing more repetition in this, and not just more repetition, but the egregiousness of the crime seems to grow with the time that people are involved in this kind of lifestyle. And so for us to be able to look at some our previous crimes, I think is probably valid and probably helpful to the court, and so in dealing with the conduct of that individual. And so I think this is something that probably will be important in terms of protecting it, because this gets us a little bit outside of how we treat some other crimes, given the nature and the what happens to the victims in this. Is probably worth our looking into being able to do this.
Mr. Penn, I asked you to come up since the District Attorneys Association are the ones who are the requestors. Could you comment on this concern?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My name is Dale Penn, Marion County District Attorney. And there, we did present testimony about the issue of sex offenses and predatory nature and the little evidence of effective treatment and the idea that this is a repetitive kind of issue. And our original bill was based on the federal rules, which have been amended to allow not only convictions but other incidents that did not result in convictions. In talking with several members of the committee and at the hearing, several members said that they supported the idea if it was limited only to convictions. And so that's why the amendments were proposed. And so this would be allowed to be brought forward as a situation where you had an offender who has a prior record and able to present themselves as this is in effect the first offense, and we had some circumstances of juries finding out after the fact that here someone they acquitted is someone who had priors for this same type of sex offense, being very angry about that and not knowing about that information. But it is based upon federal rules in other states that allow this type of information, but ours is restricted to convictions only.
Representative Bowman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We also heard testimony that day. I guess the balance is in what the goal of this bill is, because we heard testimony from treatment providers who said once they get someone who's a sex offender into treatment, they do in fact find out about a history of other activities. And the concern from treatment professionals were that somehow those conversations would now be presented in a trial, and it defeats the purpose, in fact, of attempting to get people to open up and acknowledge their previous behavior and change that behavior. So I'm still struggling with if, in fact, someone has started treatment and has started opening up to that provider, and there's another charge, even though that person may not have originally been convicted of a sex crime, if in fact we are creating more problems by passing this piece of legislation on that end.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bowman, I remember that discussion, and I think that was some of the issues you raised about the second part of the bill that did allow non-conviction information to come forward. And so this amendment, Dash 1 amendment, would restrict it only to convictions. And so discussions that someone has in treatment concerning other incidents, that would not be allowed with this bill with the Dash 1 amendments.
Representative Bowman, does that help you with the Dash 1s? Or?
It does, Mr. Chair, and I just spend lots of time with Mr. Penn debating this back and forward, so I would be willing to move the Dash 1.
All right. We are in work session. Representative Bowman moves adoption of the Dash 1 amendments. Further discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Do you want a roll call? All right. Let's do a roll call.
Aye.
Representative Janella.
Aye.
Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Aye.
Oh.
Mr. Manning?
Aye. The motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move House Bill 2306 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right, colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there further debate on the bill or the motion? Seeing no further debate, we'll call the roll on the motion to send HB 2306 to the floor as amended with the Dash 1 amendment.
Representative Bowman?
Yes.
Representative Janella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative
Hillen?
Representative
Canary?
Aye.
Representative Kibanski? Voting no at this time and reserving the right to change my vote on the floor.
I vote aye. The motion is carried. House Bill 2306 is sent to the floor. With a due pass. Do we have a volunteer for a carry? Representative Bowman? Representative Bowman will carry the bill. And that concludes the work session on House Bill 2306. Next up is House Bill... This is a good stuff. 2350. Have those amendments been out for a while?
Not, for a couple of days.
Well, let's carry this over another day if people have no experience.
I'm putting in all my amendments that I received today off the table. And it looks like almost every bill that we've gotten has got new amendments.
And all right, well, we'll carry that one over to tomorrow. By the way, colleagues, I did get permission, and this is important in terms of procedure, from the Speaker, that we'll just work our way through this morning and work our way through tomorrow morning. We need not convene Friday evening. We have permission to carry over any bills from today's agenda or tomorrow's agenda to Monday and to work them Monday morning and, if necessary, Monday evening. So we can carry over, and there'll be some further opportunity. I also have permission, if there is a package bill in regard to firearms, to further work that later on. And we already have permission to deal with the victims' rights HJRs next week. Representative Kozanski?
Mr. Chair, I assume Council's probably done this, but just to make sure that it is done, we should go ahead and post whatever we have in today's and tomorrow's on Monday, just in case.
It's probably being done as we speak.
All right. So what we'll do, and as we go through this, if we're dealing with something that's heavy-duty, substantial, we'll try to balance all of this out. We have plenty to do without it. So let's just keep moving. I'm going to hold over 2350. 2351 is 222. That ties in with 2562. We'll hold on that for a moment. We'll move to 2394.
May I go ahead, Council?
Mr. Chairman, this bill was actually passed out of committee a few days ago, and actually it was passed to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and it needs to go to Ways and Means. So
right.
I simply pulled it back to ask the committee to vote to send it to Ways and Means instead.
I would entertain a motion to rescind the referral to the floor and to instead refer this bill to Ways and Means of the due pass.
So moved.
We have that motion in front of us. I notice we have Dash 7 amendments. Well, those are old, aren't they?
Those are old, Mr. Chairman.
And fine. Dash 8.
And Dash 8.
That's what we...
You can ignore them.
All right. So the motion is to rescind the referral to the floor and to refer to Ways and Means. This is on House Bill 2394, Representative Simmons.
Yes.
We do have a fiscal impact statement that requires that this go to Ways and Means instead of the floor. Is there any objection to that motion? Seeing no objection, the motion is carried. The prior action to send this to the floor is rescinded, and House Bill 2394 is sent to the Committee on Ways and Means, where they do pass the recommendation.
Chairman?
Yes.
Was that with the dash A?
Yes, with the amendments that were previously adopted. Colleagues, we now have H.J.R. 82 in front of us. There is a companion bill, although it's not legally or necessarily a companion bill, 2488. I'll explain some details on that. The Department of Justice has some recommendations on that bill, so it will be carried over, but there's no reason why we can't take a look at H.J.R. 82 as it is in front of us. I believe we have dash two amendments. This is Representative Gardner's bill. He did have the dash one amendments. The dash two amendments are very similar, and they do tighten some language, and I'm going to ask Mr. DeHaan to come forward so that we can put on the record what these do, and this will bring you up to speed on what this referral is all about. This relates to what was ballot measure 17, the constitutional amendment, which requires that prisoners work full time. We had hearings on this before about modifications to the constitutional provisions to change some of the provisions. And Mr. DeHaan, I appreciate you coming forward. Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Benjamin DeHaan. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Corrections. I know you have a very busy agenda this morning, so very quickly I'll run through the amendments, the dash two amendments for H.J.R. 82. They're basically six, and the first one appears on page two. Basically what that does is it provides clarifying language to indicate that we can use inmate labor to benefit the community rather than simply make a profit for the private sector. Page three, the top of the page, the corrections director may carry out the director's powers and duties by delegation to others. That clarifies that the director of the department has the ability to get things done through other people. It's an issue that the Department of Justice has wanted to talk to us about, wanted to get some greater clarification.
May I add for the record that this means for as to all provisions of Measure 17, when I talked to legislative counsel, they were trying to figure out where best to put this in the constitutional provisions, and they finally opted for this particular subsection. But for the record, that means that the director may delegate as to all of the prison work programs, not just as to subsection 8. I think it's clear from the plain English that that's the case, but I thought it would be helpful to put it on the record to make sure that there is no doubt about it. Go ahead, Mr. DeHaan.
Thank you. On the bottom of page three, the Third Amendment gives us the opportunity to create additional accounts. In 2488, we're proposing a quasi-independent agency to carry out the responsibilities of the work program, and it will be necessary to create additional accounts. This gives us the ability to do that. Page four, the Fourth Amendment, basically eliminates the Prison Industries Board, which is comprised of the Secretary of State, the Governor, and the Treasurer, and it delegates those powers to the Director of the Department. The next amendment, the Fifth Amendment, to the extent determined possible by the Corrections Director shall avoid establishing or expanding for-profit prison work programs.
We've got that in front of us. We can read that.
Oh, okay. It provides clarifying language once again in regard to competition.
For the record, I think I should indicate, too, that there is a provision that says that prison work programs won't be restricted by statute or charter or ordinance or rule as to competition. There's another provision that exists that said the Prison Industries Board had to approve prison work programs. In balance, it was the belief of the people who were proponents, including myself as one of the co-authors of the measure, that that meant they were supposed to exercise common sense about not going out and doing stupid things to undermine the private sector, take away jobs, or whatever. We've heard informally that there are opinions that, oh, no, they can't use common sense. So we're putting into the Constitution that, yes, they get to use common sense, and they have discretion. So that is all about. And it does allow, basically, it puts the corrections director in a protective position It is the director who will get to decide this. But then the governor appoints the director. The governor is going to be politically responsible for what happens out there and use some common sense about where prison work programs are established. Representative Bowman?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to know if the chief sponsors of this bill have been informed of the amendments and if they're in agreement with it.
Mr. DeHaan?
Representative Mannix, Representative Bowman, I met with Representative Gardner just a few days ago to bring him up to date, and I intend to do so again today if I can track him down.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. DeHaan.
The last amendment appears on page 5, and that again is clarifying language to allow us to support community charitable organizations. That's very clearly within the domain of the department, and it's something that we want to do.
And do these amendments have the support of the department and the governor?
Representative Mannix, I believe they do.
All right. Any further questions for Mr. DeHaan? Representative Bum?
No, I was going to move the amendment.
Right.
I just was curious as to whether we needed the dash one amendment or does the dash
two. No, dash two replaced dash one.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendment since HJR 82.
Colleagues, you heard the motion. I think Representative Hansen had a remark to make or a question.
Well, we could address the motion first. And
all right. The motion is to adopt the dash two amendments to HJR 82. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the dash two amendments are adopted. Representative Hansen?
A question, and this may come under the heading of kind of common sense interpretations, but under Section 2, it says all inmates of state correction institutions should be actively engaged in full-time work or on-job training. Clearly, we've got a great many inmates at any given time. One are ill. Some are incapable of work because of mental problems or age, health issues relating to age. Certainly, you've got people that are involved in discipline programs that are segregated from the general population. How do you deal with that? Is there, in terms of who's eligible for work or who does this apply to or what exceptions do you get to make?
Representative Mannix, Representative Hansen, we take a very aggressive position with regard to defining who's eligible for work. As you just stated, the Constitution does permit us to exempt inmates. Right now there's about 15% or so who are exempt. One interesting fact, a fact that I became aware of just a couple of weeks ago, the mentally ill inmates in our system actually are working at a higher rate than the general population. We are, and that's a very good thing for their treatment and rehabilitation. So from our perspective, we want everyone to work. There are some who, for disciplinary reasons, are in the special housing units. It's just too dangerous and too expensive to put those people to work. But we're very, very aggressive, and we define the group who can't work very narrowly.
Okay. But you do have the authority to do that in the creative
That's correct.
Administrative rules?
Okay. All right.
It's actually in the Constitution.
Mr. Chair?
All right, that responded. Representative
Goldman? I move HJR 82 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the motion is carried. HJR 82 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We'll ask Representative Gardner to serve as the carrier. If he declines, we'll assign another carrier. Thank you, Mr. DeHaan.
Thank you.
And with HJR 82 having been referred to the floor, this concludes the work session on HJR 82. We'll move into work session on House Bill. We're going to skip 2562, probably holding it over to tie in with the other pieces that have been skipped.
Sure.
But we'll move on to 2807 and move into work session on House Bill 2807. And, Council, where are we right now?
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the dash one amendments, and the committee's request had been to get some narrowing language on this bill. And what the original bill did is required the supervising agency for a predatory sex offender to notify certain parties in all cases. And so the request had been to narrow that, not require it in every single case, but in certain cases. And what the Dash 1 amendments would do is provide that this notification would be mandatory and would not be discretionary if the defendant was convicted of a crime where the victim was under 18 years of age and not residing in the household of the predatory sex offender, or if the defendant used forcible compulsion in committing that sexual offense. In other circumstances, the agency could order, do the notification, but it would be discretionary, not mandatory, as it is under current law.
Do we know whether or not the amended version has a fiscal impact?
I am informed that it does not. It does not need to go to Ways and Means.
Right.
Is that correct, Mr. Lemon? Okay.
No,
I believe it.
The amended version, not the original.
Well, the original version, Mr. Chairman, did not need to go to Ways and Means.
Oh.
This would be a narrowing. That is my understanding. Is that incorrect?
Go ahead, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure. I think I heard that this one, which is 2807, does not. 2808 was one that definitely was going to be very, very broad.
Correct.
With all the other crimes for registration. But what we did hear from the sex offender probation officers is that the time that it would take for them to do the notifications was going to substantially increase their work, and they averaged 40 hours per notification. So it seems like we are going to still have some type of impact, but it may not be considered one at the state level. It may be a unfunded mandate type down at the county for the P&P.
Do you have a report here?
Mr. Chairman, what I have before me is an email from one of the fiscal officers. I'm informing me about bills that are on the agenda today that he believes do need to go to Ways and Means, and that this bill is not on that list. So.
All right. I think Representative Prasansky's point is well taken, that there's an impact at the local level. It may be that there's technically not an impact at the state level in regards to state appropriations, but you need to be aware that there is a workload issue at the local level. Representative Prasansky?
Mr. Chair, if I remember correctly, Co-Chair Lewis from Ways and Means, actually when we asked her about how this impact was going to be dealt with, she felt that it could be dealt with. So I guess I'm going to ask the committee to send it down to Ways and Means, because it seems to me that if we are going to be putting this additional workload, I'd like to see more staff available so we can make sure that these individuals that are being supervised are in fact being supervised.
I appreciate that. I will mention to you that I had several conversations with the co-chair of Ways and Means, and I told her first, well, you know, we'll be glad to work on your bills and send them to you. And then she said, well, I would like you, she said to me, I'd like your committee to see if you could narrow them to reduce the fiscal impact to see if it's possible to not send them to Ways and Means. I responded that we would try to slim them down, which is what we've done on this one. I haven't looked at the other one, so we'll have to talk about 2808 separately. And that has to go to Ways and Means. Is that, do you have that on your list?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, even as amended, that would need to go to Ways and Means.
I do think it's a policy issue that we need to address. Ways and Means would not be able to do much unless it wants to start to set up a grant program. But, Mr. Lehman, do you want to come up and talk about the impact of this legislation in response to Representative Prasansky's question?
Could we also bring a representative from AOC up?
Do we have someone here from AOC?
We do.
Do you wish to come up? Come on up.
Mr. Chair, Phil Lemon from the Criminal Justice Commission. Just to clarify my role versus the Legislative Fiscal Office, what my agency does is try to identify the corrections impact. So if it's prison beds, additional cases for probation or post-prison supervision or any sentencing changes. So that's why this bill is not on my list. If it does have a workload impact, would require additional probation staff. That's not something that would come up in my process, but would come straight from LFO or Department of Corrections.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question?
Yes, you may ask a question.
Don't give me that tone, Mr. Chair.
good
morning. Actually, my question is more to AOC. Hi there.
Good morning.
Do you believe that this bill will have a significant financial impact on local counties?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowman, I'm not familiar enough with the text. I'm looking at the title at the moment, and if there are amendments, I haven't seen them yet. All I can say is that in working on sex offender registration and related issues with the Department of Corrections, it was my recollection that we were, if it's covered by the funding mechanisms in Senate Bill 1145, then my understanding is it would be a responsibility of the department to fund that additional workload. but that's a big if.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, just looking at the amendments that Mr. Lemon just gave to me, whether or not that would be the case. So I'm sorry, my answer is I don't know.
Thank you. Could you comment on, well, I don't know whether...
Representative Bowman, is this a second question?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm just thinking out loud. Thank you.
Boy, aren't we evil today.
Any other questions for Mr. Snyder? Mr. Snyder, I guess I do. I know that you haven't had an opportunity to review these. What I'd like for you to do, if you could, is look at the dash ones and maybe give us some input. It appears from what staff has told us there's going to be this additional requirement for notification of where the victim is under 18 years of age and was not residing in the household of the offender, or that it was a forcible compulsion sex crime. And a couple of hours this morning, it looks like, before we will be shutting down. I think it would be best for us to know that, just for the committee would have that information.
I'll take a look at the Bill Lanning amendments and be prepared before the committee adjourns. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if we're going to have Mr. Snyder come back, I'm concerned about Section 3 that addresses it. It's almost as if there's an out clause in the bill, because it leaves it up to the supervising agency to determine if releasing the information would substantially interfere with the treatment or rehabilitation. And so it sounds like those two sections are inconsistent with each other. I mean, first there's a mandate, you must notify these people, and then it goes back and says, but if you think it's going to interfere with treatment, then you don't have to notify these people. So there seems to be inconsistency, and I'd like some kind of assessment about whether or not we're creating absolutely nothing, because it basically sounds like that's what we're doing if we pass this.
We'll get some clarification. Staff has some comments, I think we'll reserve until that. Mr. Snyder, what you may want to try to do, Jeff Collins, who is the Lane County Community Thieves, as an individual has been appearing on behalf of the network for sex offender probation officers, and you may want to fax this down to him, because he was one of the people that came up and gave testimony as the concern as to the impact on workload for the counties.
Mr. Chair, that's Jeff Collins?
Jeff Collins.
Okay.
Lane County P&P.
Find out how to reach him. Thank you.
Yeah, 2808. Thank you.
I want to recess the hearing on 2807 and move into 2808. Mr. Horton?
I'll go ahead and summarize, Mr. Chairman, where we are on this bill. What this bill originally did is created a classification of criminals which is similar to sex offenders. Under current law, of course, sex offenders are required to register, and then there is a notification process for the community. What the original bill did is to require a similar registration for dangerous offenders and also persons convicted of a major felony crime, which include crimes listed on the first page of the bill. The committee requested that this be narrowed, and the dash two amendments are before the committee, which narrow the scope of this bill. The crimes which are listed under major felony crimes, a person convicted of a major felony crime under the dash two amendments would not be required to register and have notification in every circumstance, but in most. And that would occur when the judge determined that the person presents a substantial risk to the safety of persons in the community or their property, or the person would be deterred from further criminal activity by registration, or the community would be protected by requiring the person to register. And it's my understanding that the intent of that portion is simply to take a situation where a person was convicted of murder when they were 25 or let out at age 91 and to allow just a little tiny bit of discretion there. What this bill does, however, is creates a new classification under this bill of what is called chronic neighborhood offenders. And what those are some lesser crimes that are still felonies that are generally drug and property crimes. And what this bill, the dash two amendments would require is that a repeat offender of either residential burglary, auto theft, unauthorized use of a vehicle, robbery in the first or second degree, or dealing drugs or manufacturing drugs be required to register and then participate in that notification process. It would not be required for all persons convicted of this crime, only repeat offenders.
It's also left up to the judge.
For the major felonies, but right, not for the chronic neighborhood crimes,
all
for
right,
repeat offenders.
I misunderstood that then.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, but we still have a referral to Ways and Means on this.
Yes, even with these limiting amendments, it would have to go to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I wonder if this could be set over. I mean, we're drastically changing from what the original bill was. And
sure.
New classifications for different people out of the level of protection down in front of us.
That'll be fine. I think that's a fair request, and it is a drastic change from the original bill. Let's carry this over on to tomorrow and see how it looks by then.
It will also come in front of us, I assume, Representative Zansky, in Ways and Means, so we could look at whether or not it needs a further weight loss or redirection, or whether or not it's even doable because of the fiscal impact. I've cautioned the co-chair of Ways and Means that these kinds of things do have significant fiscal impact, and they sound good and feel good, but you also have to be willing to appropriate the money.
Right.
Mr.
Representative Pants.
Brief comment on that. One of the unintended consequences, if you don't appropriate the money, is it creates the people that are involved in the notification, which I'm assuming would be parole and parole officers, it diverts them from their other tasks. So obviously we want to make the community safer, but somehow if you redeploy people doing one task, then there are some other tasks that are left undone.
Very well. I will carry us over.
I haven't got it back yet.
Sorry. The symbol of authority. I will carry us over to tomorrow on 2808 and close the work session for today on House Bill 2808. Earlier, although I mentioned it, I didn't talk a lot about 2488. This was the prison industries bill. And I will mention again, in case there's anyone here waiting on that, that the Department of Justice has some suggestions to the Department of Corrections. This is a bill that's been worked out with the governor's office. I think we're going to see, finally for the committee, two versions of amendments. If you get two sets that are almost identical, I'll tell you the difference that will arise. One set will still have the Attorney General's office providing legal services for prison industries. The other set will not. And frankly, what that does is that provides an opportunity for the Department of Corrections to have a conversation with the Department of Justice about the legal services that they're getting to help them do prison industries. And then we will see whether or not we think it's a policy imperative that they have the option to go somewhere else, or whether or not they're satisfied and they have enough leverage with the Department of Justice to get the help that they need that we can feel comfortable going with a version that leaves the Department of Justice providing legal services. I'm simply mentioning this on the records because I've told this to the Department of Justice that I would hope that they can have a conversation with the Department of Corrections about helping those folks out.
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Is there any other state agency that requires legal help that has the authority to get legal help outside of the Department of Justice?
Yes. For instance, Oregon Health Sciences University. When they were set up as a public corporation, they were authorized to have their own counsel. We are simply raising the point for purposes of discussion. And I assume by the time it comes up that the issue will have been resolved. But that's in case you get two sets of almost identical amendments. That will be the difference between the two of them. Representative Hansen.
I'm wondering if there's enough lawyers in jail that they can create a work unit.
That might be a novel prison work program.
All right. That's a college prison program I can support.
Well, with that in mind, House Bill 2488 will be set over. And I'm going to set that over until Monday because the technical work PRG wants to do is still significant. And they are working with the Department of Corrections and the Governor's Office. I want to give them time to mesh everything. So we'll set that over until Monday. I'm hoping we'll have the amendments tomorrow, but that'll give us the weekend to look at it. Okay. Next up is House Bill 2394.
Mr. Chair, before you gavel that in, is it possible for us to take a break?
Sure. We will take a recess until 9 a.m., well, 5 after 9. We're in recess. 10 minutes.